Hey, y'all. We recorded this month-old episode before we took a pause. But the social contract conversation in particular is perhaps even more relevant now than it was then. It's kind of funny how national discussions around mask wearing, social justice, and the Black American experience dovetail perfectly with shopping cart behavior. So have a listen. Oh, and take anti-racist action today. And wear a mask. On to the nonsense.
This is Critical Nonsense, our high lowbrow show about culture, science, and tech. This week, Joey asks special guest Cole about shopping cart theory, and Cole asks Joey about sharing values with our heroes. Woo!
Oh, it's me. It's a Joey, and this is what a Joey sounds like. And this is what an executive producer and emotional pugilist Jess Vander sounds like.
Hi, that's what is a pugilist? I'm so distracted. I can't even tell you this is Jess.
And this is what a lacrimose basketball fan and guest of the hour Cole Nielsen sounds like.
I feel like I'm in the same boat as Jess. Lacrimose.
Like Lake
Joey,
Lacrimose.
Yes.
It does sound like a lake, but
Lacrimose,
what
crying.
Does it mean about me?
Yeah,
oh, crying.
I mean, yes. You're a weepy basketball fan, and emotional pugilist is a fighter. Pugilist fighter, boxer. Rah, rah, rah. Put them
here
up.
Here for it. Here
your
for
dukes. Is there any housekeeping we need to address? No? Rate, review, subscribe. Five stars. So... without further ado, I'd like to discuss whether we're all good people or not.
Whoa. Back up.
We are good. Maybe a week or two ago, there was this sort of meme rounding the circuits of the internet. It was getting cut, you know, it was like showing up on like a lot of the aggregators, and I think it originally, the conversation started in Reddit. Someone took a screen cap and sort of merged two memes together, and then it just turned into like the world exploding. But it was this idea that I had never encountered before called the shopping cart theory, which we can discuss more, but the premise is, do you return the shopping cart? And if you return the shopping cart at the grocery store without anyone telling you or yelling at you to do it, then you're capable of self-governing. If you don't, then you're not. But this sort of extended into, are you a good person or not? Like, you know, within quarantine, I think we have a lot of time to examine our behaviors. And so, you know, ultimately, the question I have for you guys is, who returns the shopping cart?
Should we jump in?
Yes.
I mean, show of hands.
Show of hands.
I return the shopping cart.
Yeah,
I feel like this is a bias group.
We all return the shopping cart. Look, okay, cool.
Guys,
cool.
Look how good Definitely. We are. This topic is done.
We do.
Are you the type that returns the shopping cart like fully locked in? If there's a big shopping cart, it goes in the big shopping cart line, small shopping cart in the small?
Probably.
What is the extent of your goodness?
Oh, interesting. Like, do you put it in the slot of all of the carts like it? Or do you just like, is it good enough to get it past
That's
that first
space.
Line?
Right. It's in the corral.
Yeah, like in the shelter? Exactly.
I put it in.
You put it in, yeah. I do too. At one point, somebody was like, it's people's jobs to do the shopping carts, and actually, like, it gets them out of the store.
Yeah.
Like, the messier it is, the more they get to be out of the store, just kind of like doing their thing. Like, if the weather's nice, you know, if it's like pouring,
yeah,
don't do that. But I've heard some people argue for the opposite.
Yeah, leave the cart everywhere. Yeah, no,
everywhere.
I mean, I saw that too of like, someone was like, I was an assistant manager of a store. And any opportunity to just like take a break and go outside was super welcome. So sometimes this woman would go out and do the carts, even though she was the assistant manager, just as like, give yourself a break. I think it's the same thing of like occasionally just spending more time in the bathroom than you actually need to, just to be like,
right.
I'd like take a breath at work because as soon as you come back out, you're going to have to jump back into something else.
Feel you. I have noticed in times past when I go to like do the shopping cart, when I go to return my shopping cart, I will also like organize like beyond my own shopping cart. I don't do that anymore. That feels like not a thing that we should be doing in this moment, which has kind of extended to where like I kind of return my shopping cart a little bit more lazily now.
Mm. Yeah, I think like there is sort of the reason why I find it interesting and why I think it popped back up is because it's sort of getting at this idea of like the social contract, right? Like let's get into like poli-sci 103 or something like that, right? Like talk about like Thomas Hobbes and you know Jean-Jacques Rousseau and stuff like that. But I think it's sort of really interesting at a point right now where we're sort of asking people these questions around the social contract and like what are you willing to do, and like, you know, minor refresher, and I'm certainly not like a political scientist, but the social contract is ultimately sort of this tension between what is our, you know, state of nature, I think is within sort of Enlightenment political science, was like the idea of like what is life like if everyone is left to their own devices. And I think I have like the quote up somewhere. The phrase that Thomas Hobbes said was human life would be solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short in the state of nature where we're just all left to our own devices. And so the social contract is the idea of like what of your rights are you willing to forego to gain the benefits of existing within a society and getting what is given, right? And like this is sort of like a prime moment to analyze that, you know, where people in Staten Island are like boo hissing people out of the grocery store. They're not really boo hissing, they're get the fuck out of here people in the grocery store. And it's fundamentally just like sort of this test bed of the social contract. And that's like in particular why I find it really interesting why we're having this conversation now.
Well, that's where I think we now need to know what the shopping cart theory is. Like, why is it a test of the social contract?
So I'll read you the post that was going around, just like this was the sort of screen, literally a phone screen cap of the Reddit thing. We can post this in the show notes as well. So this is the exact quote. The shopping cart is the ultimate litmus test for whether a person is capable of self-governing. To return the shopping cart is an easy, convenient task, and one which we all recognize as the correct, appropriate thing to do. To return the shopping cart is objectively right. There are no situations other than dire emergencies in which the person is not able to return the cart. Simultaneously, it is not illegal to abandon your cart. Therefore, the shopping cart presents itself as the apex example of whether a person will do what is right without being forced to do it. No one will punish you for not returning the shopping cart. No one will fine you or kill you for not returning the shopping cart. You gain nothing by returning the shopping cart. You must return the shopping cart out of the goodness of your own heart. You must return the shopping cart because it is the right thing to do, because it is correct. A person who is unable to do this is no better than an animal, an absolute savage who can only be made to do what is right by threatening them with a law and the force that stands behind it. The shopping cart is what determines whether a person is a good or bad member of society. That was the meme. That was the full text of the meme.
The way that is written like takes me straight to the Haggadah we use for our Passover Seder. It's very like, this is the way of the things. We are telling a story of truth. The story of truth of the people.
Is return your shopping cart or you're a savage.
No, that's nothing like what the Haggadah is saying. Cole, what do you think of this?
Well, it takes me to like what other shopping carts are we returning? Like, where does this show up?
Exactly.
In other places in our life? Like, I have long felt, as we got into at the top, sort of, I'm going to do my part to, like, provide order in the station, in spite of, you know, the fact that it might actually be benefiting somebody else if I don't. But I also, like, really feel this in parking. I don't know. Joey, do you have a car?
Up until maybe 2-3 months ago, I had one.
Okay. So it drives me crazy when, like, because it's hard to find parking in Brooklyn. And when you see what could be 2 spots filled with 1 car or what could be 3 spots filled with 2 cars, I'm like, people, come on, we have to work together. And I'm like, should I leave notes to be like, it's just consideration. Lock into your spot, you know? And like, I will turn my car off. I'll like cross the street and I'll look back and I'll be like, ah, there's like 3 more feet. Like I didn't do it. And I'll go back to my car and sort of turn it back on, like waste the gas, you know, back it up, whatever the case may be, to feel like I'm doing my part for like the social contract. But when does it go too far?
Yeah. I think the shopping cart one is interesting. One, A, because I'd never heard it before, and because it became such a big thing all of the sudden. Mm-hmm. But I think like other examples that we've talked about in the past is like, do you hold a door open for someone? And that's sort of like a flawed example because
it's so rough.
You're sort of forcing action on another person that maybe, you know, like maybe they're going to stop outside of the door and like make a phone call or just like take a pause of fresh air or something like that. But if you're holding the door for them, then they have to rush and they have to, you know, say thank you or what, you know, like it's sort of you're pulling them into something like, and where are the bounds of like you hold the door if they're like 3 strides behind you, but do you not hold this door if there are 4 strides behind you, or like how does that work? And so the shopping cart one is interesting, and I think to that end the conversation about masks is interesting because it is something where you're saying it's not hard, it's not like wildly inconvenient, it's not anything. Like, are you willing to just be considerate and wear a mask outside, even if you don't subscribe to, you know, like whatever is, if you believe that what we're going through is unnecessary hoopla, like, are you willing to sort of participate in that social contract?
Or if you have the antibody.
Yeah.
Right? If you've already had it and you actually know that you are not going to expose somebody else, but do you wear it anyways for the people around you?
And regardless of the science of like how protected you are, how much you can protect other people, even as a person who just this week got confirmed that I have antibodies, is
congratulations.
Also a signal. I know, I'm very excited. Is that it is a signal to others that you respect what's happening, right? Like it's not even, it might not even have to be about your, you know, the sense or like what it is doing. It is what it is saying.
Right. So do you still wear masks?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, like I grew up in New Hampshire, which is common knowledge, but like this idea of like live free or die is, I've said this before, maybe here, I'm not sure, but it's like, it genuinely feels like a real, like living concept that is out physically in the world, like some giant obelisk or something.
Yeah.
Like it feels like it is there, like it is a person in the room or something. But the whole premise of that, in the way that it comes to life, in the way that people talk, is like, you do your thing as long as it doesn't hurt me. And so like that's where that line has been sort of drawn culturally, at least in my experience. And so like this idea of like not wearing masks is sort of where your freedom encroaches on someone else's freedom, and that line gets drawn, and you know, the shopping cart theory maybe is also that same type of thing of like, if you don't return the shopping cart, it didn't cost you anything to not return it, but you know, like maybe you damage my car because some big gust of wind pushes the cart mm-hmm. into my car mm-hmm. or something like that.
Yeah. Can I just say, even worse than when some person has parked in taking up two spots is when a shopping cart is occupying a parking spot that is otherwise perfectly available. And you're like, okay, I see. So now I'm going to have to get out of my car and I'm going to remove this cart. And in that time, I may relinquish the spot to someone more aggressive than I, who's going to swerve in now that it's exposed. Ah, that is just...
I've definitely pushed
goodness.
A shopping cart with my car before out of a space.
You nudged it out.
Just like
slowly. Pretty sure you're going to be like, I've definitely stolen a parking spot before.
No. No, I haven't done it.
Too good-hearted.
Yeah, too sensitive. Well, I think that brings us to Jess's shopping cart corner.
Well, is this a wrap-up?
Yeah, do you have something else?
I actually do, and like, yeah.
Tell us.
I'm not sure if we want to... We're going here. I wish I could be more of an expert on the subject, but I did see some commentary around the need for police, or perhaps the lack of need for police. Like in this current moment, like there's a lot of shit going on. And somebody posted this thing as basically like, can societies exist without police? Can they self-govern? And then it was more or less saying, look at white communities, look at wealthy communities. There are not police out on, you know, the corners. There's not a lot of monitoring. Like people get high and they don't go to jail. Like life goes on in the absence of police. Mm-hmm. And if that could be extended sort of generationally through other communities, the ability to self-govern, self-manage, to return shopping carts could increase.
Yeah, it is really interesting, right? Like there's sort of like cultural systemic, like where you have someone who is breathing down your throat all the time, like
right. Mom
not returning the shopping cart can
close
be
the door,
in and
Mom.
Of itself like a act of rebellion, right?
Right,
like
right.
Where someone where you feel monitored by police constantly, just saying like, you know, it is exactly that. It is the mom like close the door moment of like leave me alone, like I can find equilibrium if you're sort of allowing me to find equilibrium,
right?
Like that's what self-governance is ultimately. It's like this system seems to be like balanced where we're all sort of hanging out versus, just having sort of that like draconian or authoritarian like insistence, like where you're getting clubbed for not returning a shopping cart.
So we'll let Jess wrap, but going back to the quote that you shared earlier that was like left to our own devices, like life will be short and whatever the other descriptors were. But
in the state of nature, life is solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short.
Right. But like our animal species, the root of nature is not solitary, right? Like we need to come together. And so I guess this goes to like the eternal question, left to our own devices, do we steer towards good? Could you trust humans to generally steer towards good without all of the infrastructures, rules, governance, punishments in place for those who don't? Cold wrap of corner.
Cole, what have you been thinking about?
Well, as with much of America during the past, what are we at now? 140 days? Yeah. Sitting inside, trying to figure out what to do. Actually, I wish that I had that problem. But come every Sunday night for the past, 7 weeks or whatever, we were graced with The Last Dance by ESPN. They hustled their deadline, they rushed it up, they met the needs of the people, and they delivered the 10-part documentary on Michael Jordan's last season with the Chicago Bulls. And I tuned in, again, like so many other people, live TV. It was a really surreal experience, in all honesty, to be watching live TV. And it was amazing. I loved like every second of it. And for the first time, I found myself questioning the value, I found myself questioning my hero, who was Michael Jordan, for my whole life. And it has me wondering, what sort of long embedded values do we have that we may be questioning as we grow up?
So this is interesting for me because I've always been jealous of people who sort of have like heroes, I'm like weary of being like, I don't have heroes, because it feels sort of like either potentially like self-righteous or like self-aggrandizing or something like that. But like, I've just never had that feeling of like, I'm going to model myself after this person. You know, there are certain, like, I definitely appreciate like excellence in people and things like that, but I've never had that moment of like, I want to be like this person.
You want to be like Mike?
Yeah. Do you want to be like Mike or anything like that? And so it's, for me, it's always been sort of like this pick and choose, like little bits of this person, or like, you know, like in a situation where it's relevant, like applying the algorithm of like, you know, on the basketball court, maybe Michael Jordan, or, you know, like maybe even in business, actually, for like, you could use the Michael Jordan algorithm, or, you know, use someone else's in another place. And so it's kind of an interesting experience where I'm like, I'm deeply jealous of that experience of being like, this is like my person. This is like the person that I like put up on a pedestal.
Yeah. The thing that, you know, in all honesty, I think there's been a lot of like negative backlash on MJ over the past, you know, 5 to 6 weeks. After each episode, he was, you know, more or less dissected, and, you know, all the think pieces and all the ex, you know, teammates come out and kind of give their two cents. In some ways, I don't know that he is no longer a hero type figure. I don't know that I see him in a different light, but what it has really sort of forced me to think about is, I think he represented a certain thing growing up that I like deeply like ingrained within myself. And yes, tried to tap into on the basketball court, but everywhere else, like when I went and started playing music, when I started doing design, it was this sort of the myth of Michael Jordan that like drove me, which is, if you work hard, if you work harder than anybody else, if you love something more than anybody else, you can succeed. And that like inner drive was the thing that has been a huge part of my life. And again, I think that there's definitely still something to respect about that. What I have been forced to confront in the past couple weeks is the nature of that mindset, sort of a win at all costs. Is that really something to hold in such high esteem?
Yeah. This is... So when we did the book, there's a chapter called The God Algorithm, because of sort of like, what would Jesus do, bracelets and things like that. That idea of like asking, you know, and bringing it to more contemporary times, like what would Beyonce do? Like there was a lot of things where certainly after... Irreplaceable, like the song Irreplaceable came out, where people were like, you don't need him, like, you know, to the left, like push him out, all of that. And you can see that in those instances, you know, the average fan doesn't have a lot of context or intimacy with Beyonce. They have a story that they can create from piecemeal experiences, where it's enough to be like, I can use this story in circumstances and help me sort of make decisions on how to behave in a context I haven't experienced before. What's interesting about The Last Dance is that's mostly what you had with Michael Jordan. And Michael Jordan was sort of notoriously pretty distant from the media in certainly by the 90s. He had sort of like an arm's length approach with the media and wasn't giving a ton. Also sort of in the way that Kobe was also pretty sort of adversarial with the media. And this is like sort of the first time where you're really getting like the behind the curtain. There had been books written, but it was like not him saying it, not like firsthand. Like you're literally seeing, you know, Scottie Pippen or Horace Grant or some other person he played with be like, or Steve Kerr be like, he punched me in the face. You know, right. Like that mentality really comes through in a texture that you can't sort of rewrite anymore to sort of fit your own personal relationship with Michael Jordan, right? Like the construct you built in your head is probably very different than the construct someone else built, even if you both sort of held him in equal esteem. Like you used that sort of hero relationship for different ends in your life, which I actually think is like really compelling. And now it like shows you that the intimacy sort of brings that like pedestal relationship down a little bit.
I also think there something that happened to me in high school chemistry was exactly this sort of like fable of adulthood, where in sophomore year, we took our first sort of intro to chemistry course, and you learn this rule that's like, you know, it helps to simplify the periodic table or some kind of something, whatever. And then 2 years later in advanced chemistry, our teacher is like, so remember how they told you this? That was just a drastic oversimplification and isn't actually what's happening. And we're all like, what the heck? We've been operating off of this principle for the last 2 years. And now you're telling me that's not it. So you just like unlearn that and now try to understand this more complex scenario that's going on. And to me, this idea of like, you have, you know, a lesson that you learn or a rule that is fixed, and then all of a sudden it's like, no, but actually it is true-ish, but not actually always true, and you need to balance these other variables, is like, ugh, that is life, and it's so annoying.
Right. And it makes me wonder, though, like, when, as, like, further grown up, have you sort of had to square off with the truth, you know, a quote-unquote truth within you, and be like, that's no longer true. I don't actually want to subscribe to that belief anymore. I've seen a different way, or that actually has a dark side to it that I was completely, like, ignorant to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the thing about, say, what you describe as the myth of Michael Jordan, right? Because maybe part of the issue was not that the lesson you learned was it wasn't necessarily wrong. It just isn't always right. And it doesn't deserve the pedestal status like Joey was talking about.
It's more complicated than that.
Exactly. Right? It's more complicated than that sentence. And I think what's really hard then is, does that darkness consume what is otherwise like, is a lesson with positive application, right? Like,
yeah.
does seeing that dark side change things so much that you're like, well, now I'm a nihilist and I just like can't even imagine like working hard doesn't matter, loving anything, cares, you know?
Now I mean, it's clearly a nihilist.
Yeah, there we go. That would be quite the conversion story. No, I mean, I think that what was interesting was you know, it was clearly Michael's story, and he was distilling his philosophy down for people. And really, like, one of the most, like, poignant moments of the documentary was, I thought it was fantastic filmmaking. He's just kind of like, look, like, some people are going to criticize me. Some people don't agree with what I did, fine. But, like, they are not going to win like I won. And he just full on was just like, for me, it was all about winning. And now I can be generous and say, I think it was all about winning, not because of ego, but I think he really genuinely had a passion and a love for the game and his role in it that he felt obligated to live up to. I think that can be inspiring. But his methods were so capitalistic, you know? I win, you lose.
Yeah.
And for him, that was beauty. And I've held zero that up sum. As beauty for so long. Zero sum. And I'm like, I don't know that I want that to be beautiful anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting when you think about it through that lens, because this was a retelling of a story that he had. Well, whether or not he had the foresight, like, this is going to come out in 22 years from now, but to have that film crew with him in that 98 season sort of tracking the whole thing. But it tells you the story that's important to him. Like, he clearly doesn't seem like someone who is interested in being other people's hero, right? Mm-mm. Like, he's interested in being the GOAT, right? Like, the greatest of all right. time. Like, that is his mentality. And so if that is your mentality, right, like, to be the greatest, then you get this. But it's also a demonstration of sort of the sacrifices that come with excellence to that degree. I mean,
right,
it seems almost inarguable that he has a compulsion, right? Like, mm-hmm. that there is potentially sort of behavior that is, you know, not to add like a subjective modifier, but like out of the norm, right? Like, it mm-hmm. is an abnormal behavior to have that level of compulsion with regards to something like that. It also happens that he is like extremely athletically gifted and intelligent and all of those other things, so that compulsion can come together and represent something different. But that idea of like almost any hero, like almost anyone that does something that you believe is so sort of transcendent and noteworthy tends to have these weird sort of compulsory or compulsive behaviors that sort of come with like a tortured dynamic, right? Whether it's like you are sort of putting Albert Einstein on sort of this hero level, who is like also sort of an egomaniac and a bit of a womanizer and kind of a prick. Like, if it's sort of a musician who is, you know, there are very few people that get to this sort of like hero caliber that are also sort of like holistically like wonderful people. And those people are like wildly anomalous.
Can I just say, after watching the Becoming documentary on Netflix last week, that what was the most appealing to me about it was that Michelle Obama, who I see as a hero caliber human, was also demonstrating like all of her strengths while also admitting to and accepting being a flawed person, which makes her more of a hero to me. Like, just saying like, I am imperfect is the only way that I think you can achieve real hero status without achieving otherwise like an imagined or sort of a fake idealized version of what a hero should be.
And I feel like the hero of today has evolved to be more complex. I think in the 80s and 90s, when it was Jordan, and I mean, it was also, you know, Michael Jackson and Madonna and Happy Meals and like this American export of like idealistic capitalism where everybody's smiling and everything is perfect. And you, like, as soon as there was any sign of darkness, it was just like, ugh, run from, you know? And that persisted for a long time. And I feel like we just know so much better that that is no longer real. And nor is it appealing. To be so one-dimensional is not appealing. And I think that's the thing where I'm just like, even though I feel like I have evolved, deep inside of me, there's still that one-dimensional seed that is sort of judging right and wrong, good and bad, excellence from mediocrity. And I'm like, I got to uproot that seed. That seed is wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll still hang my Michael Jordan posters, but.
Yeah. There's like that idea of like, you don't need your hero to be perfect. Like, if you can get to that point of like, accepting or not expecting them to be perfect, sort of protects you from the letdown, which is sort of almost inevitable, right? Like, and allows you to sort of appreciate whatever it is that they had that made them special. And, you know, that's not a bad place to land, of like, they were beautiful in these ways, whatever it was. And And that's good enough. So with that, we find ourselves in Jess's hero corner.
Oh my gosh, Jess's hero corner. I'd like to thank Michelle Obama. Also, Mabel Chang. Anyway, we like to oversimplify things to the point where we even like to simplify that our heroes are, you know, unilaterally perfect and are aspirational in every aspect. But if we can learn anything from Netflix's The Last Dance and from Cole's firsthand experience trying to grapple with his feelings about Michael Jordan, the GOAT, that it's always more complicated than that. And that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. ESPN and Netflix's The Last Dance. So we don't have to go into the corrections department.
Thank you, corrections department co-officer Joey.
Critical Nonsense is a Sylvain Labs production.
Recorded in shopping cart studios in everywhere. Where you get your groceries.
As always, we'd like to thank our executive producer and hero worshiper, Jess Vander. And, of course, our lachrymose guest, Cole Nielsen.
We'd like to thank sound engineer and superstar basketball sports player, Alex Contel. Whoop, whoop.
We'd like to thank designer Nora Mestrich for her beautiful cover art and for her continued growth and thriving.
And, of course, our production help, always wearing masks, Sarah Gilbert, Les Jacobs, and Tony Vaughn.
And as always, thanks, Ellen.
Thank you.
Special thanks. You know what I am thankful for this week?
What?
Four-leaf clovers. Found one. No big deal.
So cool. So cool.
So
no
cool.
Big deal.
Have always
kind
looked.
Of a big
I've
deal.
Never found.
Yeah. I spend the, you know, like a half hour every morning out in our courtyard when no one's out there with Emerson in the morning. And I was like, I always look. Yeah. When you see clovers, you're like, is this the time? Is it going to happen? And I was just like, how rare are they? So I Google searched while I was out in the courtyard, and turns out between 1 in 5,000 and 1 in 10,000. And so I was like, oh, there are more than that out here. So I'm going to find one. And it took about 3 weeks of every morning just kind of like looking around in between chasing her, and boy did I find one. Boom.
Joey tapped into his inner goat.
Yeah.
Went for the win.
The shamrock goat.
Yeah.
Like grass feeding. I'd like to thank moms who also may be you know, interrupting whatever strategy game we're playing on our phones in our rooms, and they're interrupting or whatever, but they're awesome and I thank them.
Yeah, don't impose your contract on us, mom.
God, mom.
Leave me alone. I want to thank nostalgia. Tapping into old jerseys, old footage of games, and old shows that are back on the air, like Avatar, The Last Airbender, from Netflix and Nickelodeon, and showing us what real heroes are all about.
Wow.
I'd like to thank Emerson for starting dabbing when I jokingly dabbed dancing with her. I was just like being a dummy dancing like an idiot, and then I just like threw a dab and she started doing it, and it's the cutest fucking thing.
That's how you know it's really a hook, right? If the baby knows that it's a good thing to mock, you're like, wow, that there's a reason it's a trend.
Yeah.
Even a baby can't help itself.
Yeah, it's also how you know that it is like well past being cool.
That's its prime. The last dab.
Yeah, the last dab. It should end with Emerson.
I'd also like to thank Jackbox and Quiplash for the last lash, which is also a game, the third round of the game of Quiplash, which is the best of the Jackbox games, in my opinion.
IMO. Hmm. Well, with that, happy weekend. Love your faces. Y'all. Goodbye.
Thanks for having me, friends.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye. 1 more little bit of thing that I'm going to record right now for you, Alex. This summer on Fox, have we got action for you? Oh, sure, you've been to the grocery store, but have you been to the jungle? Welcome to Shopping Cart Beat.